dark. I like the dark. I love the dark. But I hate nature. I hate nature.
Yeah, that's definitely picking up on the audio.
Cool.
All right, I'll just do a quick introduction.
You do that.
This is kind of outside of season two. It's a special edition for Halloween, which will actually go up on Halloween.
Will it though, Phil?
It will.
If the people are listening to this
hopefully,
another time.
Hopefully it's come out on Halloween and, yeah. not March 2019.
It's not like you're busy or anything. You'll have plenty of time to do
yeah,
this
I don't have any other projects on the go, so I can easily just, you know, down tools and edit.
Yeah. So, spooky dooky Halloween.
Yeah, okay. So, for this little Halloween episode, we've...
It is raining outside as well.
It's pelting
it down.
It's
a bit creepy.
All we need is the thunder and lightning. Very, yeah. Very frightening.
Galileo.
So, we've got a couple of spooky topics to talk about. Which should fill up the time quite easily. First up, when did we first get interested in ghosts and the supernatural? Can you remember?
Yeah, I can. Well, I can remember me. I can't speak for you.
Well, go ahead.
I'm speaking about us as a
I didn't
parent.
Mean as a collective. I mean individual.
Those were probably Ghostbusters. I'm not gonna lie.
Was that it?
For me, yeah, definitely. Ghostbusters was it.
I mean, I must have been introduced to the concept of ghosts and the supernatural through television.
Yeah.
But I don't know whether it would have been like a cartoon or something where a ghost came along or some sort of Disney.
No, the film. Ghostbusters, the film. That's what did it for me.
So that
like that literally, like, I was like, to the point where for years I wanted to do paranormal psychology. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a parapsychologist. I wanted to do that.
That would have been a very different route your life would have taken if that.
Yeah,
had been
the case. my direction in school was, like, for a long time was either parapsychology or like ocean biology, fish and stuff, and that was mainly because of Jaws. I loved sharks,
so
I really loved sharks, so it was like a fluctuation between either one of those, because like he could do a career as a marine biologist, and it was something I legitimately wanted to do for a long time. So, and then Batman Returns came along and changed everything.
Well, I was going to say, is studying psychology and marine biology, you were subconscious.
I wasn't necessarily going to do the two.
Yeah,
but
that's
it
the
was
thing.
Like, I, as a child, it was like, it's going to be one of them.
You
two.
Were subconsciously preparing to fight Cthulhu.
It's so true. I didn't even know about that mythology at the time. It's so true, yeah. It's some kind of... You know, monstrous threat comes from the sea. I'm going to be in the first line of defense.
You're prepared.
The phone starts ringing.
There's something down there. No, I remember seeing these creepy Disney cartoons with ghosts and the skeletons and stuff dancing around.
Oh, wow, okay.
But I don't know which came
like,
first.
Like Night on Bald Mountain,
yeah.
From Fantasia.
Yeah, but I mean, I saw Ghostbusters probably about the same time you saw it.
I guess. I can't actually remember when I saw
but
it.
I mean, I
quite
remember.
Young.
I remember being young when I saw it. I mean, when was it? Was it 85?
Yeah, something like that. 84, 85.
84, 85. It must.
I'll
yeah.
Say.
It, yes.
People
it,
are like,
it
no,
must have been 84
wrong.
Or 85 because I've got a memory of where I first saw it, and when I was living at that house, I was no older than six.
Okay. I can't remember when I first saw it. I really can't. But I know it was. I had seen it when I was in junior school.
I can't believe my now that I get all the jokes, I can't believe my parents allowed me to watch it.
Yeah, same. I'm thinking about it now, thinking like that film. No, how did I see that before the age of 12?
It's not, mind you, I would actually say it is a family film.
Yeah, as a kid, you don't get it.
Yeah,
those jokes are in there for the adults.
Yeah,
they're not in there for
because they don't lead you on in any direction. They don't give
you
bad impressions that you'll follow as a kid.
You have to already be in on the joke to get it.
Yeah, it's like any of the good Bond films.
Yeah, otherwise it's just like it's just meaningless. Mm.
But the concept, the concept of ghosts or being interested in the supernatural, I don't think it was until the 90s where I really got into reading up on ghost stories and the paranormal.
Okay,
and that was after I'd moved to the UK.
Yeah,
I mean. I was in. I had interest in like fantasy and stuff out in Australia when I was living out there. But that was
interesting.
Like knights and dragons,
yeah.
And whatnot. But
I don't think I've ever really been into that stuff much.
I think it's purely because there wasn't anything like that out there.
Yeah.
When you live in this country, you're exposed to castles and stuff because they're on every fucking doorstep.
Yeah, there's like two by me.
Yeah, and where out in Australia, there's nothing like that out there at all.
Yeah.
So obviously that to me would have been exotic. But then coming over here, that then becomes the norm and something else takes its place. So I sort of started to get interested in the supernatural and not just ghosts, but UFOs and all that kind of paranormal weirdness.
Yeah. I think like I sort of drifted in and out of love with it for a long time as a kid off the back of Ghostbusters. And then, of course, like when we were kids in the 90s, the X-Files came along.
Yeah.
And that fueled it a lot. Definitely. Well, I loved all that stuff. Lean, I just like lean weird towards shit.
Government conspiracy at that
yeah,
point.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, but oh, the government's like, behind everything.
UFO stuff.
Whereas when I first started reading up on it, I was just interested in mostly the stories and trying to personally work out the truth behind them, what yeah. they could possibly be causing.
I never really liked the UFO side of the X-Files. I always really liked the episodes where they were kind of the standalone ones, I guess, where it was just something
Monster
weird.
Of the Week.
Yeah.
X-Files like was at its best when it was just doing Monster of the Week.
Yeah, that's why I really like them. Like the ones with, is it Stretch or whatever, where the guy comes down the
Oh, another one you're talking about, yeah.
And everything, that one. And the one with the flukeworm guy.
Oh, yeah, emerges every 26 years and eats someone's liver or something. It was the fact he made these weird nests out of his own bile and newspaper. It's like the most nightmarish.
That's right, I don't remember
These nightmarish paper mache things.
Do you remember that bit where they're like looking through the viewport on the side of the pipe and his sort of face comes up against the glass and he swims away?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was really gross. It's just like swimming around in the sewer pipes.
Yeah, X-Files really was at its best when Mulder and Scully were just doing the proper investigation thing. And
Squeeze. That was the episode with the guy who could like dislocate all his joints and he could get down the chimneys after people.
Because they couldn't work out how these people were getting
killed.
Yeah,
how he was getting in.
But yeah, when the X-Files got bogged down in the conspiracy stuff, that was when it got really crap.
Yeah.
I mean, I liked it when they were investigating UFOs, but I liked the investigative side of things. I wish they had had a complete detachment from it, no personal investment, and they were just investigating.
Yeah, agreed. It's like the movie was all the worst bits. It was like where the series had got to, and it was like, this is none of the stuff that I loved about the X-Files.
Yeah.
You know, them running around inside giant polythene tents.
I mean, did you see the...
Scared of the man. Mm. You know,
did you
like,
see the recent series, though?
No, I haven't. I've recorded it. I recorded it off TV and then never watched it.
You see, again, that the best episodes of that were the ones where they were just standalone episodes. And they were just Mulder and Scully investigating stuff.
Yeah,
and then
those were always the best ones, or the ones with the black goo.
Yeah,
you know.
And it was at its weakest again, where it got bogged down in the mythology, in its own conspiracy crap.
There's one that I remember, not in detail in any way at all, but there was something with a submarine trapped in the ice, and like everyone on the submarine was dead, and it was all connected with the black goo stuff, and that guy who looked like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the creepy agent.
There was that
guy.
These aliens had highly toxic blood.
Yeah.
That just acted like a nerve gas if it got exposed to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I like that concept, but the fact that it got tied up with the conspiracy BS.
Yeah. It just got really so bogged down in its own, like, thing. So, yeah, so I think the X-Files was definitely a major thing. And then it's like there were little gaps between where these things would sort of fade out of public eye. So when that kind of went away, the next thing that came along for me was Hellboy. And Hellboy reignited my love of the occult. And that introduced me to Lovecraft. And I was like, holy shit, this is a whole thing that I've never encountered.
I think I went in a different direction after the X-Files and just the supernatural stuff started to ebb away. I think I actually turned towards like steampunk and alternate history.
Interesting.
So I sort of put this whole supernatural stuff to one side after the 90s.
Yeah.
I've only recently started coming back to it with rediscovery of Lovecraft and weird fiction.
Because you write your own like Lovecraftian stuff.
Well, I write...
And it's really, really
it's,
good.
it's weird fiction. It's not like Cthulhu or anything like that. There's no giant sea monsters coming to eat New England townships.
No, but like I think... Again, like I think like some of Lovecraft's stronger stuff were the things where that wasn't a big center to it.
Yeah,
it's like some of his smaller scale stuff is probably some of my favourite things. Have you ever read that vampire story that you wrote?
I'm fairly sure I know the one you're talking about. I can never remember the title of it. But
I can never remember what it's called. But it's a guy and his uncle dig this thing up in their basement, and then they realise that it's just like the finger of this thing that basically lies underneath their whole town. And the creature that comes out to hunt everybody is like an avatar that's projected by it. It's amazing. It's like one of the best. And it's the only vampire story he ever wrote. And you're just like, this is the best vampire story I've ever read. That's absolutely amazing. That this corpse has just been living under the town. And as it feeds, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. But it just sends out this sort of astral projection to do the feeding that looks sort of humanoid.
And the rest of it just stays under the
town. Yeah, and there's, you know, that terrifying level of horror when they realize what they're digging up. They're just like, Jesus Christ, this is just like a hand or something. And it covers the whole basement, and they're like, fuck, cover it back up.
Let's just leave this alone and pretend we never saw it.
Pretty much. It's like, let's leave now. We'll never go there again. For sale sign goes up the next day. That'd be a brilliant ending to if you did like a little TV movie of it. It's just them hammering the sold sign into the ground.
This is someone else's problem now.
Yeah, packing the last like few suitcases into the back of the Oldsmobile.
It's like the end of Poltergeist. The original Poltergeist is one of my favorite endings, because their house is gone and they just end up in a motel.
Yeah, and they just push the TV out onto the balcony. Yeah, that. Oh man, have you got films that freaked us out on that list?
Yeah, that's up next. Should we edge into that?
I think we could segue into that.
The next topic was what horror films scared us the most as children.
Definitely Poltergeist. Poltergeist scared the shit out of me.
See, I didn't
that
see
film
Poltergeist
really
until the '90s, until way later.
I can't remember how old I was when I watched it, but that film, yeah. Anything with ghosts, man. Ghosts really, like, because they don't obey physical rules.
Yeah.
It's like if serial killers and stuff, at the end of the day, you can just hit them with a big stick and keep hitting them. You know, it's a physical thing. Ghosts, the rules don't apply, and every film does different shit with them, and it's like,
they can get you, but you can't get
The Grudge, but one of those, the J-horror stuff. There's one where, I think it's a girl is, like, she's being stalked by something, and she knows it's, you know, she keeps seeing it everywhere.
Uh-huh.
And she sort of runs home and goes in and gets into bed, like, terrified. And it's just daytime. It's daylight. And she's in bed. And she just lifts up the sheets and looks down, and the thing, you know, where the shadows are at the bottom of the blanket?
Yeah.
This thing is there.
I think that's the Grudge.
Up at it, and it just grabs her ankles and pulls her into the darkness. And I'm like,
no.
Nope.
Yeah, the Japanese are just...
That's one of the worst things I've ever seen. That stayed with me for years.
Proper J-horror stuff is really, really nightmare-inducing, because it's...
As I can't deal with ghosts, because of shit like that. Yeah. It's like, even if Michael Myers was after you, you can like pile shit against the door. Do you know what
and
I mean?
And he can't physically apport.
You can't just walk through the wall or something, or just appear or apparate in and suck your soul out through your brain. It's just like,
whereas
no.
the J horror ghosts still come out the wall socket at you.
Yeah.
One of the best bits.
So it's always the place you think is safest as well in J horror. You know, like everybody goes and hides in their bed. It's like you pull a duvet over your head and you're okay. It's like it removed that idea. It just went, now it's in there
it's
with
in the
you.
Bed with you.
It's like, fuck that. No.
Yeah, I think the ghost in, I think it was called Ju-on, The Grudge.
Yeah.
That was his Japanese name. That entity is, I think, one of the best creatures ever put on film.
Yeah.
Because it just the creepy nature of the thing.
Rough.
The way it crawls down the stairs. One of my
that bit where it comes down the stairs.
Yeah.
At the end. Nah.
It was actually, I mean, it might have been the American version, which I saw first rather than the Japanese.
Potentially,
one.
Yeah.
But I mean, that was shot.
With Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yeah, but it was shot
Anything
by
Sarah
shot.
Michelle Gellar.
It was shot by shot, apparently exactly the same.
Yeah, pretty much.
But the way the thing, they used the same girl for the ghost.
Yeah.
So she did all the same stuff again. But there was this, one of the parts where it first appeared, I think it was to an elderly couple who were still living in the... I can't remember. It's been a while since I saw it.
No, I haven't seen it in ages.
The camera sort of... You see the character's face, and then you see behind them the top corner of the room, and there's these weird black hairy wisps coming out the corner.
Yeah, that's right. There's some tendrils coming down, yeah.
I thought that the way the ghost appeared there was really That was a real breath of fresh air at that point.
There's an amazing bit in the... I feel like it's The Grudge, but it might be The Eye, where the main character sort of works at a hospital and looks after...
Yeah, that was The Eye.
Yeah.
If it was like with, Reflections.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The dementia stuff. I don't think that they did it in the American version. Or they definitely didn't do it as well as the bit in the Japanese version. And there's this guy in a wheelchair and he keeps sort of talking to somebody next to him. And you just think that he's like Gaga, you know, like his brain's gone to mush and so does she sort of thing, you know. And then she's walking him back to the hospital. And just as they're getting to the sliding doors, just before the door opens, you can see this little ghost kid reflected in the glass that's next to him. And it's like, nope! And it's just there for like a second as the doors open. It's just like, ah, no.
You see, that's like no. That's like a Twilight Zone revelation.
But... Yeah, but it's just enough to make you go,
nah. No, not playing this game.
Yeah, no. Pretty much.
I'm trying to remember what scared me as a kid, like, though.
Anything with ghosts just creeped me out.
Because, I mean, I've grown up now, so I'm not really afraid of anything. I mean,
well, physically.
Yeah. But yeah, if you watch a horror
surrounded by your toys.
So, I mean, if I watch a horror film late at night now, it's not watching the horror film that creeps me out. It's after I've turned it off.
Oh yeah,
and I've got to go.
If they're a good
bed.
One. Yeah. If they're a good
it
one.
It sticks with you.
Yeah, it's that thing yeah. Like, oh, I'm alone in the house now. Yep. And you do that scamper up the stairs
yeah.
And try not to look in the mirror in the bathroom because there's always something in the mirror in the bathroom.
I'm always waiting for always. There to be like a shadow in the corner just to make me shoot myself.
Or is that a thing where they open the medicine cabinet, rummage in the medicine cabinet, and then close. When they close the door, there's something in the mirror behind them?
Such a cliche.
I know, but it's still scary.
Oh my, there was a wonderful inverse of that cliche in a recent... flick. Oh, what was the name of it? I can't remember the name. It was set in the Winchester House over in California.
Yeah, I know the Winchester yeah. House. It was probably called, was it it's called Winchester? Wasn't
yes, it was just called Winchester. Yeah. Duh. But there was an excellent inverse of that.
I didn't actually see it, but I know what you mean. Yeah, didn't it? Oh, it had someone really famous in it.
English
well, Helen Mirren.
Helen Mirren, that's it. Yeah.
Oh, was it Helen Mirren?
Yeah.
There we go.
Putting on an American accent.
Weird.
But it had The whole mirror thing where, you know, you look away from the mirror and then you look back at the mirror and there's something.
Yeah, yeah.
They did that, but it was someone's, like, travel shaving mirror, so it was this circular thing.
Yeah.
But it kept turning away, so you had to keep turning it back. And you were always expecting there to be something in the reflection, yeah. And there wasn't. And then all of a sudden the mirror turned at an angle where you couldn't see it, and all of a sudden you could see what was behind the mirror. And the monster was just, in reality, behind this mirror. And it had been obscured by the mirror. It wasn't a reflection in it.
Fuck that.
Yeah.
Nope.
Well, I think that's pretty much what the guy said. When he said but, I mean, the excuse was that this guy was high as a kite on drugs. So he was sure that he was just seeing drug-induced hallucinations.
I think one of the worst bits in a recent film for me was it The Conjuring 2? And it had the bit... Did you see it?
Which one's The Conjuring 2? Is that...
It's the one that's based on the...
Enfield?
The Enfield Haunting, yeah.
Yeah, I've got that. It's a terrible film.
Is it Sky actually did a way better version with a full British cast?
Oh, yeah, I think I've got that as well.
Which is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Genuinely terrifying.
I do have that one, yeah.
It was really, really good. But there's one bit in The Conjuring 2, which was the bit with the nun and the painting.
Oh, yes. That's genuinely scary.
That was horrible.
That's genuinely scary.
All the lights go out, and you can't tell if it's a painting or it's whether she stood there or not.
Yeah, but then the painting like, comes off the wall.
And you see her sort of walk all the way around the room and then disappear behind
yeah.
The picture. It's like, no.
That, I mean, that's...
That whole scene was just phenomenal.
That was the best thing in that entire
yeah,
film.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant.
That was a genius visual concept.
Yeah, it's just really well like choreographed, I guess, is the term.
Yeah, I confess I'd forgotten about that bit because the rest of the film was so god-awful.
It wasn't great.
Well, I mean, they went off and they made a film based on that nun called The Nun.
Yeah, apparently it's not that great.
Yeah, apparently it's crap.
Yeah.
But I think everything except the very first Conjuring is kind of like all the stuff they've tried to do to extend that.
Yeah, the first Conjuring was terrifying.
Yeah, that was really good.
The first 5 minutes with the Annabelle doll thing.
Yeah.
was literally one of the scariest things I've seen in a movie.
But then they tried to do another film called Annabelle based on that doll, and that bombed.
Yeah, they're not learning.
No. they're trying to make a franchise, and they don't know why the first one worked.
Yeah, seems to be a thing.
But but yeah, films that scared me as a kid. I remember stuff putting me ill at ease as a kid. Like, well, not even as a kid, as a teenager. I don't remember anything particularly scaring me when I was a kid on film or TV.
Stuff that definitely gave me the willies in that way was stuff that wasn't horror movies.
Yeah. There was a couple of things in fucking Sesame Street which scared the crap out of me. There was this weird singing orange in Sesame Street. No, it was like these bits and pieces of a face came out of nowhere and rolled onto screen, and then they assembled themselves on this orange. And then the orange started singing opera. And then it got to a really high note or a really loud note, and then all these bits of the face flew off the orange. And it sounds absurd, but it was utterly nightmare-inducing. And that kind of stuff scared the crap out of me.
The third Superman film.
Oh, fuck. You had to remind me about that. No. No. Oh, God. I had purged that from my mind altogether. No. God, no. The robot scene in that. Oh, God, yeah. That, no. Okay, yeah.
Had you really forgotten that?
I had genuinely forgotten that. And my life was so much happier because I had forgotten that, you fuck.
The terrifying tinfoil robot lady.
It wasn't the fact that it was a tinfoil. It was the fact that she was alive when she got dragged into the machine.
I only saw it fairly recently. I hadn't seen it till you told me about it. And I can see how it would be disturbing as fuck.
Yeah, I mean, you watch it now, weird. It's probably really...
It's still weird.
It's still weird.
It's still really...
Because, all right, okay. For people who haven't seen Superman 3, one of the villains gets...
For a start, I'd say go and see it. It's actually really underrated. Yeah.
One of the villains gets dragged into this supercomputer and then gets all these bits of robot parts stuck to her. They just get sort of...
But in that really like horrible kind of Doctor Who stop motion kind of way.
And she just gets covered in all...
makes it worse.
Yeah, she just gets covered in all this. Yeah, because stop motion is always way scarier than anything else.
Yeah.
But she gets...
It's because it's uncanny. The way it moves is wrong.
Yeah, she gets encased in this thing. And it's actually just the process of her getting encased in this crap, which is scary. After that happens, it's fine.
It's kind of a bit Evil Dead.
Yeah.
It's got that whole kind of thing going on.
But, I mean, I was definitely under 10 when I saw that for the first time. And that fucking mentally scarred me. As I say, to the point where I felt much better having forgotten it. Now that you've reminded me about it, I'm just getting that same sick sensation in my stomach. And so I don't want to remember that. That was awful.
So, like, on that similar kind of note, 2001 freaked me out. You know the bit where the monkeys first find the obelisk?
Yeah,
And all the music, and they're all going mental and touching it, and it just keeps going, whoa! Just like it kept building and building, and that really creeped me out.
You see, I've seen that scene, but really I've not actually seen all of 2001.
Oh, it's okay.
Weirdly, I've seen the sequel. I've seen all of the sequel.
The 2010.
Yeah.
No.
Which I actually found to be quite an interesting concept.
The first one's worth a watch. Like, it's just, it takes a very long time to say
nothing.
Not much. Yeah.
This is what I've heard. This is why I didn't bother with it. I can't remember why I saw the second one. I think it was like a rainy afternoon or something, and that was the only thing on Channel 4, so I just sat and watched it.
2010's like if the people that made Alien made 2001, because it's basically what happened. They had all the people who worked on Alien and Aliens.
You see, the only two things
went and made...
The only two things I seem to remember about
and
it...
And has the guy out of Jaws in it.
Yeah.
And a dolphin. Psychic dolphin? Might be a psychic dolphin, or I might be getting that confused with that. Oh, what was that TV series?
Oh, Sequest.
Yeah, Sequest
DSP. With the talking dolphin.
Yeah, with the talking dolphin.
Which I quite enjoyed.
There was a thing for that in the 90s as well, wasn't there? Isn't that in Johnny Mnemonic as well? Isn't there a talking dolphin in Johnny Mnemonic? I'm sure there is.
There might have been, you know?
When he meets up with the sort of like rebels or whatever. They're led by like
I quite like the visuals
dolphin.
In Johnny Mnemonic. If
it's
I'm
one of those films
honest,
that I need to see again.
It's really 90s cyberpunk.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like proto-Matrix.
Yeah.
You can see where the Matrix is coming from.
You can see the angle that Matrix took, probably because of the stuff in Johnny Mnemonic. Yeah, but totally. Johnny Mnemonic is completely different to the Matrix.
Yeah,
it's its own thing.
Don't get me wrong.
It was based on a book, wasn't it?
I'll take your word.
One of the classic science fiction books.
I don't know. I would have to Google it.
Anyway, regardless, talking dolphins. Yeah. But, I mean, yeah, the reason I saw... The only two things I remember about... Was it 2010?
Yeah, 2010. Yeah.
2010.
The year we made contact.
The only two things I remember about that is the guy from Jaws drinking booze from a plastic cup.
Yeah.
Or plastic
Roy
bottle.
Roy Scheider. Yeah.
Yeah, and what commenting on the fact that nothing tastes better than booze from a plastic bottle.
Yeah, and wearing a uniform that looks like it was left over from Alien.
and
probably
because the fact that Jupiter ended up as a second sun. Which I found is a really interesting concept. Jupiter.
I can't remember that.
Yeah, that
I haven't seen it in years.
I think the obelisk turned Jupiter into a smaller star.
Oh, cool.
And its moons became habitable because of that.
Would that happen?
That's pretty
much very close
all
to
I remember. That's all I remember about it because I've only seen it once. And it
You're
was like
skin cancer in about 2 seconds of
I'm
being on the surface of Europa
a dwarf
or something.
Star or something like that.
It'd have to be a really dwarf
alien
star.
Magic.
Alien space magic.
Super science.
So there was that and Disney's Black Hole, which I think is actually a U.
Yeah.
But is one of the most terrifying things ever.
Is that just because of the bit at the tail end where he's locked
all
in?
All of it. The whole film is just uncanny and weird and odd. I watched it with Helen for what, like, might have been last Halloween because she hadn't seen it and I was like, it's so scary. We have to watch it. And as soon as I put it on, like, you get the John Barry music starts playing. And she just looked at me and went, this is really
dark.
And it's like, yeah. It's tonally all wrong. And not to go down a black hole of Star Wars, because we've talked over this too much. Yeah.
You can see the bits where it sort of says, right, we have to have a Star Wars moment here.
But the problem with that is... Disney saw Star Wars and made Black
that's
Hole.
That's what they came up with.
They now own Star Wars.
Yeah. Well, they're doing something it's nightmarish. Like,
they saw Star Wars and have made Event Horizon. Because that's about the nearest thing you can get to that film. Yeah, it's like, shit, this is Event Horizon.
We mentioned this in the previous one, though, where Black Hole is basically the kids' version of Event Horizon. And even then, I still wouldn't show it to fucking kids.
No way. That film is so disturbing.
But
if you're looking for something odd to watch this Halloween that isn't like every horror movie you've seen 200 times, I actually say watch.
Yeah, I mean...
It's genuinely uncanny and creepy.
There's
and
only
weird.
One bit of Black Hole which really sort of ruined it for me, and that's where the robots are having this sort of shoot... It's like the robots socialize.
Oh, yeah.
And they have this
and shooting
competition. Shooting
match, yeah.
Yeah, that's the only bit which sort of... Yeah, that's a proper Disney moment.
It's the only
there.
Bit that feels like a Disney film, yeah. And the rest of it's just like Alien.
But, I mean, yeah. Oh, yeah, the rest
it's
of it's
really,
awesome.
It's really dark.
The main scientist has decided to zombify the entire crew.
Oh, that's horrible. And you realise that, you know, they take the... Spoilers. They take the helmets off and they're all just like manky.
But it was really the tail end of it where they're escaped, or they have to go into the black hole and the evil scientist ends up inside his own robot. Trapped in hell.
Yeah.
In hell, a depiction of hell in a Disney movie. And the heroes get whisked off, I'm assuming, back to Earth or something.
Or another dimension or something.
But they get led there by an angel. I mean, it's just because that bit, it goes completely off the map.
It's so batshit crazy.
Yeah. But just, I think it's... This is obviously a thing for... I don't like the idea of being encased in anything. Because, I mean, that bit in Superman 3, a woman's getting encased in metal.
Yeah.
And then Black Hole, you get someone encased in his own robot. So yeah, the thought of being trapped in something that you can't escape
from.
That
bit at the end of Black Hole, like, that warped my brain as a kid. I mean, that really freaked me out. I've carried that image with me for years. And it's not, I'm not alone. I've talked to other people from our generation who just go, oh my God, Black Hole.
And they'll always quote that scene.
It's really horrible.
Yeah,
it's that
bit at the end.
I mean, the whole film is tonally off.
Yeah.
But then when you get to that at the end, it's like straight out of Hellraiser or something. It's absolutely fucking nightmarish. Jesus Christ, that film.
You do have to constantly remind yourself,
this is a Disney film.
This is a Disney film. Actually, yeah, it was the music which I'd completely forgotten was John Barryman.
Yeah, it's John Barry.
Barry.
Not Barrowman. Barrowman.
Very different.
Yeah. He's somebody else.
But yeah, I thought for a moment that I was going to watch a James Bond film when it sort of score started to
kick. I love
in.
His music. It's phenomenal. It's probably one of the best like film composers.
He did the score to Zulu, didn't he?
Yeah, sure. I think he did, yeah. And Out of Africa and so many.
But I mean, yeah.
Oh, and I think he did Howard the Duck.
Really?
And the soundtrack to Howard the Duck is amazing.
I haven't seen it.
I've not seen it, but I kind of really want to. And somebody in work sent me the soundtrack, because they're quite into soundtracks. I went, check this out. And I was like, this is amazing. This is absolutely amazing.
I'm going to have to track it down on YouTube. Yeah.
So good. It's all like noir detective stuff, but composed by John Barry.
Was Howard
I'm sure it was him that did it. I'm going to have to check now, because I want to get these factually
Lucas?
Accurate.
I seem to remember George
Lucas
having
a
connection to Howard the
Duck.
Yeah.
Because they hired somebody, like, you know, and they did all the puppet stuff and everything, and then Roger Rabbit came out at the same time.
Oh,
it was like,
God, no wonder
God
it got
damn
destroyed.
It.
Nothing beats Roger Rabbit.
But you know what? I'd love him to do it as, like, a Marvel film, but if they just did him as a 2D character.
Howard the Duck?
Yeah.
Well, they had an interpretation of Howard the Duck.
I know, but I don't want a CG thing. Can you imagine if it was all live action and he was just 2D? Because maybe he just comes from a dimension where that's
there is
a
no
thing.
Third dimension. Yeah.
I mean, that would be amazing.
It would be good, but I can't see Disney doing that.
Nah, they wouldn't.
They would never dare.
Well, that 2D's dead to them now. It doesn't exist, does it?
Oh, yeah, that's such a shame.
Thou shalt not do any
more
2D.
What was the
2D?
Last one they did? Princess and the Frog, which was actually really good.
Yeah, it's got thematic issues, but yeah.
Just visually. I mean, I thought that 2D was done and dusted, but then that comes along and think, yeah, they could still do stuff with it.
4.6 out of 10 on IMDb.
And I'm sure that's
not too bad. That's
I was
going to
say, I'm sure those extra
seen,
points are
I've
probably for
films
cult
that are
viewing.
Way worse than that. I have definitely seen. Yeah, John Barry did do the music. Yay. Oh man, yeah.
I'll have to look it up now.
You've got to listen to that. It's phenomenal. Yeah, I've seen films that are way worse than that. I mean, I've watched Birdemic.
Birdemic.
Birdemic. Have you never seen Birdemic?
Birdemic. No.
It's literally the worst.
Can you
thing
have
ever.
A birdemic? Is that possible? Because birds are already everywhere.
Imagine that Michael Bay remade The Birds, but didn't know anything about films and had no budget.
I thought you were going to say he didn't know anything about birds.
No, he.
Okay.
Right. So it starts off with like a couple, you know, meeting each other. It's like, you know, again, but you basically see their relationship in real time. You know how, like, films edit time? That's kind
right.
of the thing. It's just, like, you literally, half the film is them, like, going on dates and stuff and just, like, living. You're like, what is going on? And then birds start attacking, but they're really bad, like, CGI birds that explode when they land.
This sounds like a version of The Room, just with birds in it.
It's terrible, but I tell you something, it's better than that After the Apocalypse you gave me. Because I still haven't made my way through that. I actually made my way through
Birdemic. I can't even remember the title of that one.
That I've literally tried about 3 times to watch that
Well,
film.
There's a reason I gave it to you.
Helen falls asleep every time. I mean, every time. It's like guaranteed to just knock her out. It's like if you're feeling tired, just put this on.
I mean, I love my post-apocalyptic films, but that was just a piece of
shit. It's shit.
It was
I mean,
awful.
Like, and I have watched some terrible films.
Actually, have you noticed...
Green Lantern is better than that.
Yes, I will agree to that. Green Lantern is better. I got through Green Lantern.
Yeah, I've made it through Green Lantern. It took me 3 attempts, but I did make it through it.
But there's been a couple of DVDs which I've picked up recently where the premise on the back sounds like something I'd really be interested in, and the front cover looks kind of enticing.
Yeah.
And then it turns out the front cover has actually nothing to do with what goes on in the movie. The blurb only vaguely describes...
describes the film
accurate.
They wish they'd had the money to make.
And then sometimes the screenshots aren't actually from that film.
That's amazing.
There was a Nicolas Cage film, I think it was called Left Behind, which was set just after the rapture had taken
place. It's got Nick Cage
it's
in
got it. Nicolas Cage in it. It's a bad film. Amazing.
Yeah, but... No, but that's an actor.
Yeah, but
I thought we were talking like super low budget.
No, this was a low budget. I think they spent all the budget on
Nick Cage.
Okay, right. This is the premise. Nicolas Cage is an aircraft pilot. He's an airplane pilot, and he's flying a passenger plane.
Yeah.
And then the rapture takes place, and then a whole heap
the rapture.
Yeah, and then loads of people vanish off the plane.
Yeah.
And loads of people vanish off the ground so that it can't land.
Yeah, okay.
And all the aircraft staff have buggered off and they can't get back down.
All I can think of is, like, we need a reason that this plane can't land. And someone went, the rapture?
I think Nicolas Cage...
yeah, that's a great idea.
I think Nicolas Cage's scenes were all filmed in one go and it was just in that cockpit. But anyway...
Can you get him for the one day?
But the point I'm getting to is...
Cost us $1 million.
The point that I'm getting at is that the screen grabs on the back of the DVD box weren't from that film. They were from another Nicolas Cage film called Knowing, where there's this dramatic aircraft crash and Nicolas Cage is sort of running through the wreckage, and the screen grabs are taken from that film, not from the film that is actually in the DVD case.
Holy shit.
I don't know if that's... It can't be legal. No, actually, they wouldn't have done it if they couldn't. But I mean,
don't know. It sounds like a proper scam, that.
Yeah. I'm surprised that the people that made
that's
Knowing...
That's false advertising, yeah.
Well,
surely.
The people that made Knowing should come out and say, what the fuck are you doing with this? But yeah, that after I watched that piece of utter dog shit, I vowed never to buy a DVD that I hadn't already proofed the trailer for. So
yeah.
No more impulse buys for me,
yeah,
unless it's like
yourself.
pre-1990.
Yeah, because at least like shit films from then are a different kind of shit.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't have... I bought Night of the Comet as an impulse buy.
Oh, that film is amazing. There's another one for your Halloween watching.
Oh, yeah, Night of the Comet.
Yeah.
I mean,
we should do a list of movies that people should watch for Halloween. We really should.
We'll come up with that for another episode. But, yeah, so Night of the Comet was like the last input. Well, no, anything pre-1990s, which is why I got Night of the Comet. But, yeah.
What's next on the list?
All right, next up on the list is what locations or, yeah, what places scared us as kids? What kind of things did you encounter as a kid that scared you? Me living out in Australia.
The entire of Australia.
Just Australia.
Just Australia, yeah.
No, but the house that I lived in was on this sort of incline, so that the ground...
So you're going to say it was on an Indian burial ground.
So it sort of sloped down this hill. But nights in Australia got really dark, like seriously dark really quickly.
Yeah.
And because the cities were kind of spread out, there wasn't any ambient light in the same way that you get here.
Sure.
So stuff got really fucking dark.
Yeah.
And the lights from the house only illuminated like a couple of feet away from it.
So just this little house and a patch of light and utter blackness.
But so you could sort of walk down into the garden, into the darkness.
Yeah.
And I always used to see how far I could go down there before I got chicken shit and ran back to the light of the house. But every now and again we'd get given sparklers.
Yeah.
So, and sparklers don't illuminate crap.
No.
But you feel safer sort of walking into the gloom, pointing the sparkler out, and then the sparkler goes out and you leg it back to the house. Yeah. But yeah, just those shadows at the bottom of my garden, they were like the first thing that I was ever really, really scared of. And they were like the focus of a lot of nightmares that I had as a kid.
That's interesting.
Like stuff, like the nightmares I had as a kid was always about stuff coming up from the garden, or coming up from the bottom of the garden. So I think, yeah, those simple shadows in the bottom of the garden were the first thing that really terrified me. In terms of geography.
I can't think of anything. I'm trying to think. It must have been places that like freaked me out that I wouldn't go.
Places where there's usually people, like school.
Yeah.
That freaks you out. If you're like at school after everyone else has buggered off.
It wasn't when I was a kid. It must have been when I was in college. I used to go and pick my mum up from the hospital sometimes because she worked there. And like, I'd go in to get her, and like, the downstairs part of the hospital was all outpatients. So it was shut down at night, but it wasn't locked up.
You could still get
in. So you could go in. So I'd go in there to go and meet her, and I have to walk across the whole bottom floor of the hospital in the dark.
It was just empty. Oh, shit, in the dark.
Oh, yeah, the lights were out.
Fuck.
They shut it all down.
Fuck that shit.
So you just had like moonlight coming in through the windows.
Moonlight in the hospital.
Yeah. And nothing else.
Fucking no. Have they never seen a horror film?
That was scary. Yeah. Because it's just utter silence in your footsteps.
Click, click, click. Oh, God. Like, yeah. I mean, hospitals are insanely creepy places in the day.
Yeah. There's just nobody around.
Yeah.
And like every now and then there'd be like, where someone had done maintenance, there'd be like a panel or something out of the ceiling with a load of cables hanging down and shit.
Or what you thought were cables.
Yeah, and I was like, You're just there going, I'll go round that.
No, not today.
So yeah, I mean, that was pretty creepy. That was definitely pretty creepy.
That kind of falls into the category of, well, no, like I say, hospitals are creepy, but just places where there's normally people, and if there are no people, I mean, it's the same if you're out in the, I was in London years ago as a kid. Well, not as a kid, a teenager. I was down there with college for some reason. And I had been on Oxford Street in the day.
Yeah.
And I'd seen how busy that was.
Yeah.
And then I was there again, like, just after midnight.
Wow.
And it was empty. There was fucking no one there.
That's bizarre.
I know. There was, like, there was no traffic either.
What?
On Oxford Street.
So yeah.
So, right. Okay. I guess stuff moves, people move, like stuff moves into other areas at night.
I guess so, yeah.
Because, I mean, if all the shops are closed on Oxford Street, no one has any reason to be there.
But that's how they filmed the beginning of 28 Days Later.
Yeah, they just paid people not to go into town.
Yeah, I mean, well, it was...
Just before
yeah, they went in really early so that you still had daylight.
Yeah.
It was like 6 in the morning or earlier.
On summer or something.
Yeah, and then they just... Yeah, so it was light really early.
So they just had to have him run around.
Yeah, and then he's just walking
London
across this bridge with nothing, nobody around. And it's like the whole place is just deserted and we'll say it's midday.
Do you think they'd actually do anything like that anymore, or would they just take a picture and digitally remove?
Yeah, do it on computers now.
I guess it depends on the budget.
Probably just film him in a green room and then just build the entire
London behind him.
Yeah.
Oh.
Sad, isn't it? In a lot of ways.
Especially since you can always tell.
There was where my mum grew up. She grew up in like a little cottage in the middle of nowhere. It was literally at the bottom of this valley, and there was nothing else around for miles. And I used to go back and visit this sort of area a lot. And around there was a little church, and it's a really, really old church, like sort of Norman kind of age. It's fucking ancient. And that place always used to creep me out. And on the far wall, it has like this sort of medieval style painting of death.
In a church?
Yeah, in a church. It's like this like 8-foot skeleton.
That's weird.
With a scythe.
Especially for a European thing. I didn't think they had depictions of death in churches.
And they like a timer and everything. Yeah, they did. But like it's pre-Reformation. So a lot of churches had all that kind of stuff. But when the Reformation came along, they were all like whitewashed and everything was removed from them. A lot of them had those sort of Catholic style murals and all those kind of things.
I was just about to recap.
But it's
what
also
I
that
said.
Really like naive kind of medieval painted style as well. That place used to really freak me out.
Because I was thinking,
I couldn't go in there for a long time as a kid. I was just like, nah, I can't. I just used to get really, really weird vibes from it.
I was about to correct myself saying I've seen loads of woodcuts with. Well, I don't think it was actually a depiction of death, more as in death as an individual entity, but more a representation of death in an area, like to do with plague.
Yeah.
Because as you say, with the hourglass.
Yeah, just sort of walking through a field of corpses. Mm. Yeah, I think it's somebody else in the painting as well. I can't remember. It's been a long time since I've been there. But that used to really spook me right the fuck out. And I was literally like, nah, I can't go in there. It just used to get really weird, bad vibes from it. And I was just like, nah.
Have you ever been into a place where you've just had, well, yeah, you have, by the sounds of it, been into a place where you've just got a bad vibe and felt that you shouldn't be there? You just
yeah.
Get out. There's
I've
been
done
a couple of
before.
Old houses that I've gone into, like seriously old houses.
Yeah.
Like National Trust type places.
Yeah, and you just go, no.
There was this sort of Tudor house that I went into at one point, and there was one room that actually more or less my entire family went into, and collectively we sort of looked around and thought, no, bad shit goes down here. We don't want to be here.
Like weird, isn't it?
There were heads mounted on the wall, stag heads or deer heads or something on the wall.
Yeah.
And you just sort of looked around. You got a really ill vibe from the place. Like some sort of occult gathering takes place here and we're getting bad feedback from that. So we sort of had a look at that and then left the building completely.
In my secondary school, there was like a story that one of the teachers had died in one of the buildings. I never know if that's actually true or not, but that was definitely like one of the like urban legends of the school. And me and my friends, we weren't supposed to go into those buildings at lunchtime, but we snuck in there one lunchtime. And we went up onto the second or third floor. It was definitely up a couple of floors. There's nobody else in the building because it was all, you weren't allowed in there at lunchtime. And I actually saw a wheelie chair roll out of a room into the middle of a corridor stop. Yeah. All on its own, and we just fucking legged it.
You see, I'm not sure if
I was really scary. I've never managed to explain it. But, like, yeah, we're just walking, like, so a huge long, like, corridor, because it ran right down the middle of the building. It was, like, a massive building. And it's this chair just rolled out into the middle of the hall and stopped. It didn't even really roll to a halt. It just rolled out and stopped.
I'm not sure what, like, I would say if I saw that.
We just fucking legged it. We didn't say anything.
I mean, if
I just ran.
If I'd seen that, like, 20 years ago, I would have done the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I was a kid.
But having, like, seen that appear in movies so often these days, I'd probably come up with some quip about death by cliche.
Yeah, I just go and look for the strings now. But, like, back then, fuck. I couldn't tell you why. But
I mean, I still get weirded out by stuff if it moves or if you see something flit out the corner of your eye.
Oh, yeah.
I like, it makes the hair on the back of your neck stand.
Yeah,
up.
Yeah. You get that thing where pets look at shit that isn't there.
Oh, my. Yeah, our family cat does that.
Yeah,
all the time.
My cats used to do that. One of my cats used to do this thing where it would suddenly fixate on something in the corner of a room. And then it would follow it round until it was looking past you. It's like its head would turn all the way until it was looking at you, but behind you. And you're just like, nah, I'm not turning around. Fuck off. No. I've seen a meme about that. And it was, could be a moth. Could be a serial killer. You won't know till you turn round. I was like, I swear to God, they just do it for shits and giggles. They're like, watch me freak this human out now and just stare past your shoulder. You're like, what is it? What the fuck is it?
You see, some cats, I would credit them as having a level of intelligence to do that, but not my mum's cat.
Aww.
No, he's thick.
What's his name?
Sullivan.
Aww. That's a cool name for a cat. That is an awesome name. I love when cats have, like, people names, when they're called, like, Steve or something. That's awesome.
Well, the cat we had before that was
Sullivan's
called...
a really cool name for a cat.
Yeah.
I might actually have to nick that and use it in something. That's great.
The first cat that we had when we came to the UK was called Oliver, because he ate his food and then cried for more. We usually wait and see what the character of a cat is before we name it.
Yeah, you have to do that.
Yeah, you can't
the few time, that. Every time I've owned a cat, you kind of have an idea of a name in your head, and then when you meet the cat, you're like, no.
Yeah, we had,
I know what this cat's name is.
Before we had that cat, we had a hamster as well.
Yeah.
And we hadn't decided on a name for that, but my mum found him outside the cage twice.
Yeah, Houdini.
We called him Houdini. Yeah. Oliver and Sullivan, I think it's because he's a really fluffy cat.
Yeah.
He got that name from the character in Monsters Incorporated.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Sully, so he's called Sullivan from that.
That's awesome.
But yeah, he's thick. The only way he'll terrorize you is by constantly standing in front of you as you're trying to traverse a room. It's like the only fear he induces is, oh, am I going to trip over him in the dark?
Is there anything else on that list?
All right, last one on the list is horror movie cover art, which is a lost art in
the last list on the left.
The last item on the list is horror movie cover art, which it's a lost art these days.
Is it like the box art or posters?
I'm going to say box art because they don't do it anymore.
Have you seen, just slight tangent, but also not, the poster for Overlord?
I know of Overlord. I haven't seen the poster for it. What is it? 80s Tastic or something?
It's really clever.
It's
basically a white sheet.
Yeah.
With droplets of blood on it, but they're shaped like paratroopers.
Oh, that's genius.
Yeah, and there's like a little plane and everything. It's really clever.
It's clever. I mean, that's the thing. It's become...
It probably won't be in the cinema because you never see those cool ones. It'll be like the triangular montage of heads, which is what you always get now, a stack of people who are in
It's all very graphic,
all sort of motion,
all
sort of
design-y these
photoshopped together badly.
I'm thinking when I think of horror movie cover art, I think of the kind of stuff that I saw in VHS rental shops as a kid,
like the hand-painted sort of Evil Dead covers and
They didn't have Photoshop back then.
The stuff that was actually painted, like huge paintings.
And it was literally painted.
Yeah.
They were proper pieces
of artwork. I'm literally seeing in my head the Evil Dead 2
poster. Yeah.
Yeah. All the green the covers and everything like that.
But I mean, I going into video stores as a kid, my brother and I, we'd never go to the kids section first. We'd go straight to the horror movie section and look over all the movies that our mum would never, ever let us rent, ever. All these ghastly video nasties. And they were all these wonderfully garish covers.
Yeah, I'm just Googling some now because, like, just from me. Oh, man, Fright Night. Yes.
The original.
Yeah, with the house and the cloud that's, like, all made out of weird vampire faces.
I did a sexy parody of that last year. I think it was last year, anyway. I turned the big face into a large-chested lady, so she was looming.
That's
over.
So unlike you. You didn't even have to explain as soon as you said, and I was just like, I know where this is going to be.
It was a popular picture, though.
The Exorcist classic, yeah.
That was actually a photo, though, if I remember.
I know,
correctly.
But it's just still good.
As a still from the...
Jaws is painted. The
yes,
classic Jaws
yeah, the
poster
classic with
is like
the shark coming up out of the water.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah. I love the way the teeth are done on that, because they don't really look like that, shark's teeth, but they just look like a whole bunch of steak knives. It's just absolutely brilliant. It's all layered up on top of each other. Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of bollocks you get now. It's like a bad book cover. It's like a make-your-own book cover. You know those websites where you can put your own stuff together? Like, keep seeing adverts for, like, web design pages, and they're like, oh, now you can make your own logo. Yeah. Out of all the same bits everyone else is going to make their logos out of. And there's only going to be about 4 or 5 of those that really look good. So everyone's going to have the same fucking logo.
I'll tell you
it's
what.
It's like, come on.
I've got a bunch of Liam Neeson action films kicking around somewhere.
Yeah.
And if you line them up side by side, they're all exactly the same. They've got Liam Neeson holding a gun, pointing it slightly off camera. And that's it.
Well,
they're
yeah, but
exactly
in fairness, like, aren't all the films exactly the same?
More or less.
Yeah, his daughter gets kidnapped, yeah. And then he goes mental.
Something needs to be done, yeah.
Yeah.
But there's no excuse when it comes to the movie covers. You've got to try and make it look different somehow.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. City of the Dead.
Oh! That's City of the Living Dead. Check to see.
I've never seen that.
Check to see what that's... Is it set in Dunwich? I think it
I
is.
I don't know.
That's a real. I've got to get a hold of it. I had it on VHS, if it's the one I'm thinking of.
It's not telling me stuff. This is all image related.
No, come on. Get to IMDb. Check it up.
I'm going to have to type stuff in. No. But entertain the people while I have to use my other
I'll
lobe
just edit
of my
it
brain.
Out. It's fine.
City of the Living Dead.
This bit is not intended for broadcast.
Have you seen the new Halloween? While we're on the subject of horror movies.
No, I've held off on watching that.
It's really.
Is it? Oh, fuck, I'll go and watch it next week then.
It's really good.
Because yeah. I was sort of 2 minds about it. I didn't know if people were just going along to see it because it was Jamie Lee Curtis, and people do quite like Jamie Lee Curtis.
Time's not been that kind. It's catching her up now.
That's fine. Actually, no, mind you, I did see her on Graham Norton when she was promoting it. She looked fine there.
Yeah, well, yeah, but I mean, she's not... In the film, she's supposed to be a little bit crazy.
Yeah, she's supposed to be weathered in the film.
Weathered.
Stressed.
How do we
out.
Make her look terribly
she's
old?
Supposed
we'll
to
just
be
not put
out
any makeup
but yeah,
on
don't,
her.
Don't tell me anything about it because I'm going to go and see
I'm not going to tell you anything about it. It's fucking awesome. Go see it.
I will.
It's absolutely brilliant.
I'll go and see it.
It's like the first official sequel. They take a massive dump on all the other films.
Did John Carpenter?
Including To the Point. Yeah, John Carpenter wrote it.
Oh, so he did write it?
I think so, yeah. I'll have to check.
I was actually
I'm
wondering
sure.
if he'd had...
He did all the music as well. It's fucking amazing. It's probably got the best soundtrack ever. And there's a homage to nearly every Halloween movie in there, including Season of the Witch.
Oh, sweet. That's,
there's at least 2 like, homages to Season of the Witch.
I mean,
including, I'll tell you, because I didn't spot them until I read the credits at the end. The masks appear. So all the other masks... The kids have them.
Actually, what's the date? 7.
And the music is used in it as well.
4 more days to Halloween.
And the music for The Fog appears in it. It's fucking awesome. It's so good.
I wanted to sing the Halloween song from Halloween 3. 4 more days to Halloween. 4 more days to Halloween.
But
yeah, if I
there's
had...
a 10-hour version
yeah.
of that.
Oh, I'm not surprised. But I mean, if I had to make a choice of which Halloween I'd want to watch, I would actually lean towards Season of the Witch over the original.
Yeah, but you have the good version of Season of the Witch that is uncut. They've edited it since
what?
Then. Yeah. You know the bit where, is it like there's a hotel or something and somebody's wearing one of the masks?
Yeah.
And their head like explodes and that bug crawls out of their blown up mouth.
There's two main scenes. There's one where there's...
Yeah, the bit where the bug crawls out and everything. It's probably the nastiest bit in that film. But it was literally my favourite scene. That is cut so you don't see the bug coming out of their head.
There were two really gross bits in Halloween 3. There was a bit where a woman starts playing with the microchip that's in the mask.
Yeah.
And it zaps her. And it basically blasts her face apart.
That one, yeah.
I don't know if you actually see it get blown apart, but you see the aftermath.
Yeah, that's it. And the bug, like, crawls out of the hole in her face.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's edited out.
What?
It's not in there. The same as they also cut Watership Down. You know the whole point of Watership Down, where they find, like, all the rabbits that have died from myxomatosis?
I've not seen the film, I'm afraid.
Right, so there's a really... You know, you get the really famous, like, Bright Eyes song.
Yeah.
So he's following the black rabbit of death.
Uh-huh.
He follows it through the mist while Bright Eyes plays, and it leads him to this, like, other Warren. Now, the reason that this film was so traumatic for every child who grew up in Britain, you haven't seen it, you never had it inflicted on you in school, is that... He then goes into this warren. All these rabbits are dead from myxomatosis, because that's why.
And that's not a pleasant way for a rabbit to go.
Yeah, the voices told them to leave their homes, because Fievel has visions, and he prophesied that bad things would come in. And he goes into the thing, and you see them all dead. All their eyes are like blown out, and there's blood and shit everywhere. It's fucking horrific. So whole point of the movie, right? That's cut. It's not in the version you can get now.
Well, doesn't that...
It just goes through all the little song and everything, and then at the end, and then it just cuts. As he gets to the rabbit hole, just cuts. It's like, what? I know it's God horrible, but it's kind of the point of the film.
Can't have the little butterfly children being upset by anything.
So a reporter and a psychic... Hang on.
What are we talking about?
And a psychic race to close the gate of hell... after the suicide of a clergyman caused them to open, allowing the dead to rise from their graves.
Yes, this sounds...
City of the Living Dead, 1980.
Yes, that sounds...
It looks horrible.
That sounds like the one that I watched on VHS.
It looks nightmarish.
Yeah, it was really weird and bleak. Does it say it's set in Dunwich?
That's all it tells me. I'd have to go to the wiki page. Do you want me to go to the wiki page? Why? What's with Dunwich?
Well, that will clarify whether it's the one that I saw or not, because that was definitely Dunwich, which is from Lovecraft. There's nothing actually to do with...
Yeah.
At least I think it's from Lovecraft. There's not actually a place called Dunwich.
The Dunwich Horror, yeah.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. There's a lot of reading.
Never mind.
Plot. Yep.
Right, there that is the one that I saw.
In New York City, during a seance held in the apartment of medium Teresa Mary Woodhouse... Mary Woodhouse.
She's a descendant of some coven of witches or
Mary
something.
Mary Woodhouse, a comedian, experiences a traumatic vision of a priest, Father Thomas, hanging himself from a tree branch. So it's a comedy then. In a cemetery of the remote village of Dunwich.
Yeah. But I mean, it's another one of those really bleak films.
You know, you're just scrolling through and you can just see the highlighted... bits, you know, the bits that are like sex doll.
Oh yes. Yeah, this
All Saints Day sex doll. Mine's a rubber sex doll. What does it have to say about his sex doll?
No, it's just there's this weird guy who gets accused of murder. Oh, what the
that's
hell?
Not what that's I not think of it. when I think of a sex doll.
That's actually, that's nothing to do with... That's one of those weird real dolls.
Yeah,
things.
That's much more...
No, the sex doll in this... Dunwich
also love doll or blow up doll.
Really?
Type of sex doll. It does not look like that. They're the sort of things that get given to you on snag nights and just look terrible.
Well, that's the
kind
of thing...
permanently surprised.
That's the kind of thing that shows up in that City of the Dead thing. There's this weird guy that gets accused of murder or something. But then he gets a drill put through his head. It's really horrible. But there is this scene in that City of the... City of the Living Dead? Is it City of the Living Dead or just City of the Dead?
City of the Living Dead. Sorry, I was reading what Wikipedia had to say on sex dolls. Which is just deeply amusing to me. It's because of the cadence and the language.
It's all very matter of fact, because
it's written like a with accessories, vagina, anus, mouth, penis for sexual stimulation. Good to know.
Nice.
I always think of like aliens coming, like trying to learn about human race, reading their stuff. It's like a sex doll.
It kind of makes
Xandex. Tell me, what is sex doll? We will look it up, Bladex.
It does make me
dear God.
It does make me wonder what, like, in the far future,
the lizard race is ruling this dusty planet.
When these relics are dug up, how will they be interpreted?
Yeah, because it's going to take them like a million years to rot, isn't it, if it's made out of plastic. The only things that are going to be left are, like, plastic bottles and dildos. That's going to be it. There's going to be nothing else left.
Oh my God.
Everything else will have rotted away.
How did this species go extinct if they were so obsessed with reproduction?
Oh man. So what covers do you remember that left a mark on your tiny teenage brain?
You know, I can't actually name any of the films at all.
This was a good question to have written down.
It was more the style that they were done in.
Yeah.
This painted arty style, this sort of garish poster art, which you just do not get on horror films these days.
No, it's a shame, really. I wonder if there are any books on it. I bet there are.
I've got one.
Have you?
Yeah.
Well, for just horror movies?
Well, all VHS films. It's just called the VHS cover art book.
Well, I thought long and hard about that title.
But it does have a huge section on horror movies.
Yeah.
But it's just it wasn't just horror movies, obviously, then, if they made a book about it.
Well, no.
I guess the methods of photo manipulation weren't that hot back then, so they couldn't just take a still from the movie.
I got to admit, I'm not a fan of this modern art of movie posterism. I think it's unimaginative and dull.
Well, all they do is they just seem to take a couple of stock photos of the characters and then drop in a bit of background.
And mash them all together in Photoshop with an explosion.
I mean, if you look at every single Marvel cover, if you line up all of the Marvel movies side by side and look at all the covers, they're all the same thing.
Do you know what, actually? This reminds me. Oh, I don't have the photo on there now. But one of the big movie companies did a reissue recently of like all their big name movies like Clockwork Orange and shit like that.
Oh, is this the one with the really graphic design?
Yeah, and they did those beautiful like sleeves. Yeah. There's these beautifully designed things. I was so tempted to buy some of them just on the graphic art.
Same
because
here.
Some of it was absolutely gorgeous.
It was really clever.
Yeah, like really, really
smart. It actually felt very 1940s.
Yeah,
it
was like
it was.
Stuff that's associated with the film.
Yeah.
You know, like The Shining was an axe, I think, or something, if I remember. They were really, really smart.
But I mean, if you go onto DeviantArt and look up alternate covers for...
Yeah, I know, they're all like
some of the graphic designers have done really good jobs, really clever. They've put a lot of thought into it. It's not just taking a stock photo of the main character and...
Photoshopping out all the blemishes and putting an explosion behind.
I mean, this has to be something that's part of their contract now. You have to pose in a certain number of things for the posters.
Oh yeah, of course.
And it's just on a blank background, so anything can be dropped in behind you.
Yeah. Well, while they're filming half the movie on the green screen sheet, they just get them to stand there for a couple of seconds and strike a couple of poses. Vogue.
I mean, it is just so cheap, and it doesn't stick in your mind.
It leaves no residual like imagery.
I mean, I've got a good example of a modern day thing. It's actually from a video game cover. The video game cover for Doom, the most recent Doom. That's a double sided cover.
Oh yeah.
So the cover that's sold on the shelves is just what the usual fare that you'd get these days.
Yeah.
But on the reverse side of it, it's a painted version which emulates the original Doom.
No fucking way. Have you got it?
Do I have it? Doom.
Oh, man, that is beautiful, isn't it? I can just hear the music.
So why wasn't that the main release of the thing?
I don't know, Phil. I mean...
Because it's so pretty. It's so very pretty.
Well, they get into this feedback loop, don't they? They go, oh, no one's going to buy this because it looks old-fashioned. And then that loop just feeds back in on itself because people don't buy it.
It's
and then,
Doom.
Exactly, the
it's
whole thing.
Doom. It's from the 90s.
But I mean, that's awesome.
The Dark Souls cover.
Yeah, the Dark Souls Prepare to Die edition is actually a much better cover than the original Dark Souls cover.
Mm.
That's Artorias.
But is that painted or is that just a grab? I think it's a grab. I think
it's probably a combination, to be honest.
Well, they'll have grabbed the model good. And then touched it up in Photoshop.
Yeah, and sexed it all up.
Yeah, it's not uncommon.
But that's really nicely done. It's a really nice graphic image.
Yeah. But that's certainly one of the better ones. It's certainly more iconic than the other stuff you'd find.
It's better than that as well. Oh, Ninja Turtles. What is that? Compared to the original movie poster as well.
Ninja Turtles the movie.
Yeah, do you remember what the movie poster is?
Isn't it
where it's just the manhole cover being lifted up and they're all peeking out?
Yeah,
and it's all and the whole city of New York above them.
And what we Genius. Have here is just some utterly garbage photo montage of the turtles.
They've also tried improving the cover to Jurassic Park as well. I've seen new versions of Jurassic Park cover that are just like horrible montages of T-Rex and things.
No!
As opposed to
the black
with the logo.
Logo on it.
Fuck's sake.
Why?
What is
Why?
Happening?
Because Why would you make it look worse?
Morons. Whereas the Jaws cover is still the painting.
Yeah.
Jaws is just... Because I bought it the other day. I was like, I don't
because
have Jaws.
Because you can't improve upon that.
No, you can't
That's
top
just
it.
Perfection as far it's, as, it's as far as movie
I had that
goes.
On my wall for years. It's so, so good. That is such a terrible cover. Why? Ninja Turtles, such a good film.
That does that DVD that you just held up there does look a lot like some cheap thing that you get in the pound store.
I know, right? You almost want to print off your own, don't you? You want to print off your own version.
I keep
put the original cover
on it. I keep meaning to give that a shot to like just take my favourite movies and then do my own cover for them.
Yeah,
just
replace
in my
it
because
I'm sick of this shit.
No, not just as a fun exercise. It wouldn't, wouldn't look anywhere near as good as was it? Because most of my favourite DVDs actually do have good DVD covers.
Is that the car alarm going off on that burned out car?
No.
That'd be hilarious.
I'll tell you what, the quick backstory. Just before we started recording, there was a car which had been abandoned behind my house and set on fire.
Because this is where you live.
Because I live in Little Gotham. So but the first I heard about that, the first I knew that there was a car on fire was I heard a horn go off, and it kept going off. So it was like. And it just continued on.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I thought, oh, crikey, someone's just leaning on the horn. What's
going on
out there?
Someone's dead on the steering wheel.
So,
like in all those movies where the car goes off the road and it's just, you know, because the guy's just dead on the steering wheel.
So I went and took a look out the back window.
Column of fire.
And it was just like, oh, right, there's a fireball out. So that was fun. I'm getting flashbacks from when I used to live up in the Northeast. Because when I lived in the Northeast, I lived in a house that had a proper back alley behind it.
Yeah.
The kind of place where just garbage and crap gets chucked. And there were like two or three cars which had been dumped out there over the course of my stay in that house, which were all set on fire.
Fucking hell.
One of them right behind my house where the garage was. My mum was losing her shit because she was convinced that the entire thing was going to go up. And there was no way to get the car out because the burning car was in the way.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so we moved from there a long way away.
And now it's found you again.
I know. The little fire pixies have followed me.